So why do you think your father suggested you come for counselling?
I think because my mother died and he can't talk about it. And my sister and I didn't speak for a year because she thinks I tried to sleep with her husband. And because I spent most of my adult life using sex to deflect from the screaming void inside my empty heart. I'm good at this. Although I don't really do that anymore.
Welcome to The Anglophiles, a show where two Americans talk about British movies and TV. I'm Sheldon.
I'm Danny.
And I keep getting confused that it's November already.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere.
It felt like this year was really going at a snail's pace, and now all of a sudden it's November, which means it's Christmas, which means it's New Year's.
It's true.
It's New Year's, like next week.
Yeah. Happy 2020!
Oh. I've seen my first house with Christmas lights on it.
Oh,
it's only... It was like... decked out. I was driving through West Hollywood today, and it was like everything was blue and white, and it just glowed.
Wow. Amazing.
It was startling. I wasn't expecting it.
What else has happened in the last couple weeks?
Well, we started watching a new show. It just premiered this week, His Dark Materials.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're watching His Dark Materials. We might want to talk about it on the podcast later.
Yeah, maybe we, like, let the whole season go by.
It's an HBO show. It's not like it's a BBC show or anything.
But we did do Game of Thrones, and this feels more British than Game of Thrones.
It's true. The author, Philip Pullman, is British.
And it takes place in an alternate London.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's a lot of British cast.
There's a lot of really good British actors in it. So, yeah, we might have to cover it for funsies.
Yeah, that might be interesting.
Maybe at the end of the first season.
Yeah, kind of a little wrap-up. That would be fun.
Yeah, what else is going on? Oh, I have a listener mail.
Read it.
Oh, I will.
Who's this one from?
This is from Matthew Langdon. He has written in before. So Matthew wanted to basically give a little bit of a context to the whole Polari thing. Do you remember when we were talking about Polari?
Vaguely. I tend to forget things the second I say them.
Okay. Polari is the, it was like the British slang, but for like gay men.
Right.
And then
okay.
It was like a whole language you could kind of talk in.
I did so, love that.
So Matthew says, "Hiya. I have just binged the Kinky Boots and Cornetto podcasts on a long train journey. Such a fun listen.
I'm glad.
Unlike Cockney rhyming slang, Polari is an actual thing. There is a British radio comedy show from the 1960s called Round the Horn, which features, amongst many others, two characters who speak Polari. It was really daring at the time to have openly gay characters.
Yeah.
The only phrase I can remember is Bona Tivada your eek, which means nice to see you. You can get it on audiobook in the UK, and it still holds up really well and is very funny. Cheers, M. Do you know what's interesting? Is
what?
I opened Matthew's email this morning and read this.
Yeah.
Also this morning, I was listening to the My Dad Wrote a Porno podcast.
Yeah, one of your favorite podcasts.
Which is a British podcast.
Right.
And they also were talking about Round the Horn.
Wow.
Actually... no, it was a different British podcast.
How many do you listen to?
There's another British podcast called You're Dead to Me, and they just did an episode on the history of LGBTQ people, and so they basically started talking about Polari and Round the Horn. So it was really interesting to hear hear about Round the Horn twice in one morning.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. So yeah, that's something we'll have to check out.
Sure.
Thank you for that, Matthew. That's really interesting. Also, there's one thing I forgot to talk about when we were talking about Polari. There is a comic book character who speaks in Polari.
Interesting.
I don't think you know who it is, but in the Doom Patrol comics, especially the Gerard Way Doom Patrol, the character Danny the Street, who is a street.
Who you love.
Oh, I love
that character. Characters
He's
of all time.
He's a sentient street named Danny.
Yep, don't think about it too much. It gets
weirder.
He's
really cool, but he can speak through, like, any of the radios and car radios.
He speaks through signs.
And stereos that are on his street, he can speak through. And when he talks, he kind of speaks in Polari.
Interesting.
Which I thought was really interesting. I always thought that if they were to make his character, take it to live action, which I think they did, actually. on the DC show. I always thought Eddie Izzard would be really good.
Yeah.
Voicing Danny the Street. But anyway, yeah, that was really interesting. So that was the listener mail.
Yeah.
I think we're almost caught up on listener mail. So if anyone wants to email us, feel free.
Feel free to tell me the ways I was wrong. Because we get Facebook messages letting me know. those are pretty great. But maybe we do a wrap-up little compilation sometime soon of just small things that we've gotten wrong, like little corrections that we've received. It may not be a full-size mail, but we do appreciate when you guys reach out and let us know, hey, by the way, you misunderstood this. This is actually a part of our culture.
Yes.
Or, like, what you said isn't entirely true, and then give us some more backstory. Filling in those blanks in our memory is really great.
I do have to say, every British person that writes in to tell us that we were wrong about something, we love it. You know,
so
we,
polite.
I think, yeah, everyone's very nice about it, but, I think also, like, if we're saying things, like, we would rather know the correct version. So, yeah,
absolutely.
I love these corrections. And it's so interesting, like, I think you and I both know probably more about British pop culture than the average American.
Yeah.
But in doing this podcast, I've learned, like, we think we know England.
Oh, we know nothing.
Like, we think we know England so well, and then we keep learning more and more and more that kind of tells us, like, wow, there's just so much to the culture. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any news?
I've got a fun piece of news. I say fun. I don't know why I do that. everything's fun to me. But the Queen announced today, at least the Queen's dresser, revealed that Her Majesty will use faux furs in any future outfits.
Ooh.
She will no longer be wearing fur in new outfits and new clothes designed for her. It'll use fake fur instead.
That is really cool.
So it doesn't mean that she's going to completely stop wearing fur. If she has old outfits, she's still going to wear them because she looks good. You know, like the Queen looks good.
I kind of agree with that, you know, like, buying, like, secondhand fur and stuff like that. Like, stuff that already exists.
And, I mean, I think she's been under the heat for a long time of people being like, you don't need furs. Nobody needs to wear fur. And so she's finally going fur-free.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
That is a really cool piece of news.
Speaking of the Queen, that clip is going viral again of her seeing cows. Have you seen this?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God. It's great. Everyone else out there, go and type in the Queen sees cows.
We can also post it to our Facebook page.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to try to post it to our Facebook page. I'm pulling up a GIF so I can show Danny right now.
I have seen that video. Yeah,
it is the happiest I've ever seen
kinda,
anyone.
She does kind of, she does a comedic double take and then goes, cows.
Do you see them? They're
That's
there,
really
cows.
That's really cute. The Queen's really cute.
Yeah, she's great.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah, so that's what I've got going on. She saw cows and she decided to stop wearing fur. Maybe the cows led to that. I would like to think so.
She's so in love with cows that she was like, I gotta stop.
Anything that's a friend of a cow is a friend of me.
Cows are pretty awesome.
Sometimes.
I love cows.
Yeah.
You don't?
Well, I had to work with cattle, and so I think anytime you have to work with livestock, a lot of the fun is taken out of it.
Oh, I love them. I think they're so cute.
Yeah.
They're
pretty cute.
So my thing isn't really news, more of a fact, a British fact.
Ooh, hit me with it.
So I learned about something this past week, and it is the gold post boxes in England. Do you know about this?
I mean, I've seen them before in stuff.
Well, you've seen the post boxes.
Yeah.
Or as we would say here, mailboxes.
But I understand the difference,
Danny. I knew I was just saying. So, post boxes. So, they're usually always red. Like, all of them.
Yeah.
And throughout the entire UK are red. And so, or at least England. They're all red, but some are gold. And do you know why some of them are gold?
No, I have no idea.
So, I'm getting this from Wikipedia. It says, to commemorate British gold medal winners at the 2012 Summer Olympics and 2012 Summer Paralympics, various post boxes in the hometowns of medal winners around the United Kingdom, plus one each on Sark and the Isle of Man, were repainted gold. It marked the first occasion in modern times that the color of post boxes in the United Kingdom has been changed from their traditional red. Originally intended to be a temporary measure, due to the positive public response, it was later decided the color would become a permanent tribute, with boxes additionally receiving their own special plaques.
That's really amazing. I think
that is the cutest thing.
Yeah, and what a great way to honor somebody where it's like, hey, we know, like, we're super proud of you, and we get that that was, like, literally a one-day thing in which you did something crazy.
Yeah.
But we want to honor you forever.
Yeah, and you brought, like, I mean, to win a gold medal for your country, like, it is so amazing to be able to, like, bring that honor to your country. So I think that's a really, really cool way to kind of honor the athlete.
Yeah, to give back.
Yeah. I thought that's was incredible. Really cool. One of those facts I know that my mom is going to love.
Also, is she going to love what we're about to talk about this show?
Great segue, Sheldon. My mom does listen to every episode of this podcast. I don't know if my mom's watched Fleabag. I've been meaning to tell her to watch it. This episode is probably going to be an explicit episode because Fleabag
is an explicit show,
both in dialogue and in content.
And in comedy.
It's very, very explicit. So, yeah.
It is unafraid. That so, is the best way.
It is unafraid. So, yeah, we are covering the show Fleabag.
And we know this is, like, a show that's still running, and that's kind of one of the reasons why we had to do it. There are a lot of shows that are still running where you go, okay, let's see where this goes, and then we will figure out how good it is as it goes on. Like, yeah. I think a lot of comedies, especially American comedies, takes a couple seasons for you to really appreciate what's happening.
Yeah.
And then, but I think with a lot of British comedies like this, immediately you're like, oh, we have to take this seriously. This is really good.
It's true. You know what's interesting is I actually have heard that there may only be 2 series.
Yeah, I can see
there won't be more. Probably because
she's getting so much work right now.
Yeah, she's got other projects to do. But here's something interesting that I was unaware of until very recently. I watched season 1 of Fleabag and I was like, whoa, that was cool. And then the second season came out. I binged it in like a day and I was like, this show was the best. And then it wasn't until like a week ago that I realized this is based on a one-woman show that Phoebe Waller-Bridge used to perform at a Fringe Festival.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's why I think it also makes sense that it wouldn't continue. Because I think the first season is kind of like an extended version of the, like, I think it was like an hour-long monologue. Yeah. And so it kind of makes sense that, like, season 2 just kind of built upon it, but, it, you know, where else could it go at this point? So,
I mean, we can see what marriage is like for her.
I don't know if that character can get married. I don't know.
Anybody or would can get married.
Would get married.
Okay,
I don't know. It's fascinating. So, how would you describe Fleabag? Like, what is it about?
I mean, I binged it all in, like, 3 days. Like, I hadn't seen any of it. I kept getting told to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's about primarily relationships, whether sexual or familial or people who are gone. It's how you deal with everything. And it's about a woman who is kind of a huge fuck-up from start to finish. Like, everything in her life, she does not do well. And she's constantly craving sexual relationships, but in doing so ruins other relationships.
I just think it's very honest. It's extremely honest. It's, like, brutally honest.
Yeah, in a way that we don't generally see characters on TV.
Yeah, and I think that it does take a risk for your character, your main character that everyone's supposed to like, to be this brutally honest about their insecurities, about the, like, unproductive thoughts that they have in some ways, and I think people connect with it. I think you still need to make your main character likable, but I think that having a character that's this just, like, I don't know how to describe it.
It is just unabashed in its delivery of lines and characters and dialogue.
Yeah.
In a way that I think a lot of other shows aren't. Like, they don't touch a main character like this.
Yeah.
Or if they do, she's more the butt of a joke
than
somebody we're supposed to pity.
I do think that it's interesting that, you're right, it is a very sex-positive show. And I think it's really cool to have a female character this sexually active with multiple partners in a show, and it's not portrayed as a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting is they kind of, the show illustrates the difference between enjoying sex and getting out there and having a lot of sex, which is fine and healthy, versus the destructive side of it. Because I think there can be a destructive side of it. And it kind of illustrates what happens when you, you know, use it poorly.
And that's kind of part of it, too. That discussion that I don't think you get in other shows of, like, hey, is literally, is everyone else thinking about sex all the time, or is it just me? And if it is just me, that's not good, right? Like, and so I think there are a lot of interesting conversations, too, like the idea that she is always, like, thinking about and invested in sex, but then by the time it's happening, it's not as enjoyable as she thinks about, but whenever it's done, she's constantly thinking about it again.
Yeah, that's true. She does say that she thinks about it more than, like, thinking about having it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there is a line kind of like that.
I really liked that line. It felt real.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the different characters and kind of the situation that the main character is in kind of at the beginning of the story?
Yeah, so people don't have names in this show for the most part.
Yeah, some of the characters like, yeah, are I don't named. Need that. Yeah.
Including our title character is just Fleabag.
No one ever says her name.
Which is fascinating. It took me till the end of the first season before I realized that.
Yeah. It sneaks up on you.
But then also, there's the guy that she is sleeping with for many episodes in the first season is just called Arsehole Guy because she lets him do it in the arsehole.
Yeah.
But that's I love funny. That's his, like, that's his name. That's what he's credited as. That's his whole thing. That's boiled down to
he's
a person.
He's really funny. Yeah, a lot of the characters, like, her dad, they never say his name. I think really the only characters, like, they never say the godmother's name. Claire and Martin are really the only characters that they, and Boo.
Yeah.
And Harry.
And Harry.
So I guess
but also it's just the bank manager guy.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I do love, though, there's a moment in the second season where the godmother can't remember her father's name. And it's so funny because it feels self-referential. It feels self-referential at that point, where it's like, yeah, we get it. Like, we don't know his name either. It is a funny joke, and I'm sure in that moment would be uncomfortable if it happened.
For sure. Yeah, so the character basically is starting out, she is running a cafe, a guinea pig-themed cafe, and it doesn't seem to be doing very well. It's very, there's usually never anyone in it, so it's not going very well. She's got all these unpaid bills, and if she can't get, like, customers to come in, like, she needs a small business loan. She sees her sister every now and then, who is kind of, how would you describe Claire? She's kind of frigid and neurotic.
Yeah, pretty stuffy.
Yeah.
She is calculated, a person who doesn't generally take risks.
Mm-hmm.
She is somebody who is successful because she has, like, followed a little, like, dot-by-numbers path to success.
Yeah.
And now that she's there, she's unhappy.
Mm.
Because of most things in her life are not going the way she wanted, and she's not willing to take those risks.
I really like Claire. I think she's a great character.
Yeah.
She's really funny.
She grows on you a lot.
But she feels real. Like, we all know people who are like that. They're very, very, they need everything to go well, and the minute something doesn't go well, they're stressing out and they're angry. It's just really interesting.
And then we know those people, too, that they talk about, like, I'm going to have this big, huge life change.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't happen, and you're like, yep.
Yeah.
We kind of knew it wasn't going to happen.
But
then we also know that person, like, will just show up with, like, a shaved head one day, or her hair cut way off, and you're like, whoa. This isn't you.
Yeah.
But they felt it. Like, I think that kind of person bends a lot, and then they snap big time the other way.
Yeah, I guess Claire is kind of like that. There's also Harry, who is Fleabag's
ex-boyfriend.
They always break up. They break up and they get back together, and they break up and they get back together. It's interesting that in this first season, you see it where they break up and it's pretty final. And she's like, oh, he'll come back, and he doesn't come back.
Well, because he always comes back because he leaves a little dinosaur figure.
Yeah, his little dinosaur.
Somewhere in the apartment.
Yeah.
In the flat.
So he leaves and she just kind of smiles because the dinosaur's still on the counter. But then when he comes back in and gets it, it was such a good move because, like, I think if you're viewing it, you're like, oh, they're on and off again. He's always going to come back. But when he takes that dinosaur, you're like,
you know.
Oh.
Like, this is done. He's not crawling back.
He is actually done. I do also love that one of their most recent breakups was because she was watching Obama.
Oh, yeah, and masturbating.
It was so funny! And that's one of the great things about this show.
Yeah.
Yes, there's Harry. There is also her father, his character.
He feels so real.
Her mother passed away, and he is now dating their godmother.
Who swooped in very fast, we see in a flashback.
Yeah. Played by Olivia Colman. Who is a gift.
So this, for us, this means she is our most discussed guest, I think. The person who's been in the most things so far.
Maybe. Yeah.
She's been in three different
shows. She's in Broadchurch, Shaun of the Dead.
And this.
Yeah. I bet there's been someone else that we've talked about more.
I think...
Who else? We'll have to, like, look at everything that we've done and kind of...
Actually, no, I think Stephen Fry has been in... at least three things, where we did Fry and Laurie, Blackadder, and QI.
Amazing.
So she's in good company, at least.
That's true. It's true. Yeah, Olivia Colman is fantastic in this show. She's so good at being, like, not evil. Because, like, evil... I feel like there aren't that many people that you meet in real life who are actually evil. Evil is something you see in movies.
Yeah.
And Olivia Colman's character feels real. Her type of, like, cruelty and coldness and,
And open sexuality.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She feels so real.
Oh, my God.
She is kind of a caricature of, like, a middle-aged, artist. But she feels real.
I love the giant, like... massive shirt she's always wearing. Those, like, things that could be a dress or a fly suit. Like,
it's a caftan.
Ugh.
Yeah, she's really good. Her father is also very good. He's a really good character. It's kind of one of those things where you can tell, like, she was maybe closer with her father before, but now that he's with her godmother...
Yeah. They lost
the godmother has kind of, like, put a wedge in between them, and he's clearly, like, always, like, going back and forth almost having to choose between the two of them, and then you don't really see until the end of the first season he kind of has to choose between the two of them, and he picks his
wife,
yeah,
or who he's marrying. Yeah.
Yeah, it's real sad.
Great episode, the wedding.
That's a good episode. Who else? Oh, Martin.
I was gonna say
Martin is such a douchebag, but he's so good. The actor is so good. What's that guy's name?
I forget. Brett Gelman.
Yes.
Yeah, from Stranger Things and so much more.
He's kind of, his character is American, right?
Yeah. He's kind of like... I believe he's the only American in the show.
An American, but he's so good in it. Like, he's such a jerk, but everything he says is delightful, because the way that he delivers all of his lines is just really funny.
Oh, he's such a controlling, terrible douchebag, and I think everyone knows a person like this guy. And I feel like everyone knows somebody who is, like, stuck with them, and you're like, please leave this person, and they won't.
Yeah. Damn.
So sad. Then I can't believe you haven't brought up, in the second season, along comes your favorite character.
Oh, the priest?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to talk about Boo first.
Oh, okay.
Just to kind of wrap up the first season. Boo is Fleabag's best friend. It's always, always cutting back to these flashbacks of her and Boo. And they were best friends and roommates and really close. And you kind of get the feeling that Boo was the only person that Fleabag could count on.
Yeah, the only person that liked her for her.
The only person who truly wanted to be around her all the time. And didn't just put up with her, like, wanted to take... her pain and everything.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those friendships. They do a really good job of portraying how close they were and how good they were for each other.
And I think showing that, like, intimacy isn't just, like, a sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can be very close with somebody. That it's just that kind of familial, that agape love.
This episode is going to contain spoilers for the first and second season. So if you haven't seen Fleabag, there's some spoilers.
You know the drill. Skip to the end where I get the word right.
But yeah, when I first saw this, the whole time you're like, oh, I can't believe Boo died because she was trying to punish her boyfriend for cheating on her. And
some people were saying she committed suicide.
She wanted to, like, get hit by a bike and break her finger and go to the hospital, and when he came to see her, refused to let him see her, just to kind of, like, get back at him.
Which
is kind of, like, the most innocent thing you could do to someone as payback, and so it's really sad.
Is it?
I think you're not harming them. You're just
harming yourself and giving them mental stress. Like,
I know. I'm just saying, like, she wouldn't harm anyone. Like,
but I don't think it's the most innocent thing.
Okay.
I think it's a little devious.
I get that. I'm just saying, when you're that in love, like, people do crazy things.
Right.
When you're, like, out of your mind things when you're in love. I just think that it's so sad that, like, she would never, like, harm someone physically, you know? Like,
right.
She just wanted to, like, have that moment of being like, no, I'm mad at you. And it's just really sad when they finally reveal in the final episode of the first season that the person that Boo's boyfriend cheated on her with was Fleabag.
Yeah.
Like, how could you do that to your best friend?
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool that Fleabag is just so open and, like, will sleep with anyone. That's cool. But, like, when you find out that she slept with her best friend's boyfriend that she was in love with, like, that is the worst thing. Like,
yeah.
That's the worst thing.
Because, I mean, and probably from what we know of her and the relationships that have been set up in the show, she was probably on a break from her and Harry.
Because
mm-hmm. they've obviously been dating a long enough time where they live together. Like, this isn't a new thing.
Yeah.
It's
brutal.
The only small thing I wish the first season would have had, because that is a thing that they drop on you at the end, it felt weird that that guy is not in the show at all.
Yeah. I mean, he shows up in the shoe store.
Oh, I guess I didn't.
You weren't looking
oh.
when that came on. But yeah, when she goes to the shoe store with Martin and that guy's in there.
Okay.
And she sees him and then she's like, and she has to get out. So you know, you see her running away from him, like, panicked.
I do kind of remember that,
but you think it's just because, like, oh, you're the boyfriend of my dead friend. I can't handle the, you know, now I'm thinking about her. But you don't realize it's because she's like, wow. And so it's really interesting to see also how, like, that's a terrible thing to do, and it kind of got Boo killed.
It absolutely got her killed.
Yeah, it did. It pushed her into, you know, trying to hurt herself, which ended up killing
really
her.
Really hurting her.
But also, it ends up putting a wedge in between her sister and her. When she tries to tell her sister that Martin tried to kiss her, and then Martin denies it and is like, she kissed me. Like, she now has a history of, like, being sexual with a close person's partner. So, yeah, it's really,
Why trust her around any man? Yeah.
It's rough. It's really rough. But it's very good drama. It's very meaningful drama.
And it's one of those things, I think, like, it is a terrible thing, and she made a choice that she has to live with forever, but it is one of those very real things that a lot of people make terrible mistakes like that they should not make.
Yeah.
That in a moment where they know I shouldn't do this, mm-hmm. have a moment of weakness, and they do.
Yeah.
I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying it feels so real to watch that and just seeing the consequences of it and those ripples as it touches everyone.
It just
knows and everyone's talking about it.
It haunts you.
Yeah. She can't even have normal conversations with a cab driver. Like, I mean, granted, he was hitting on her and it was gross, but she shut it down real fast by telling him about how her friend died.
He was like, oh. What other characters should we talk about? Yeah, so the bank manager is also a really good character. She goes in to apply for, like, a business loan, and it's a firm that had some trouble with sexual harassment, and
she flashes him.
She accidentally flashes him. She goes to take her sweater off thinking she has a top underneath, but she just starts to lift up her sweater and basically
just see her bra.
Shows her bra to him, and he's like, ma'am, if you think that's going to help you get the loan, it's not.
Like, you have to go.
I love that moment when he's like, I think you should leave. And she's like, she gets up to go, and she goes, pervert, and he goes, slut, and she goes, wow. It's so good. But I love how that guy they start off as this, like, ugh, like, they're
at
and then they, like, dismiss each other, and you're like, wow, what a terrible person.
And then by the end of the first season,
they're friends.
He's probably the nicest person in the world to her.
He's a friend. And it took was when she goes to that retreat where you can't talk, and he's next door at a retreat for men who have trouble respecting women. And
still didn't fully understand what that was.
I think that they, all of them, got sent there from their works. Like, maybe they either harassed a woman or demeaned a woman in the workplace, or...
But I don't get that program.
I don't
know. And also why it's next door to a choir
tree. They have to yell
slut.
That
was, like, it was very convenient, fun comedy, but that probably was the weakest episode of the whole series to me. I hated that.
I like that episode.
It just didn't feel real.
I do like, though, that, yeah, she kind of goes out there and, like, he's completed his thing. And then they kind of just sit down and, like, share a cigarette together. And just kind of, like, they don't, you know, like, bare each other's souls to each other. They just kind of, like, open up a little bit. They have a little bit of a heart-to-heart. And he's like, this is what I was dealing with when I met you, and I'm sorry that that happened. And they just kind of, like, get on each other's sides. It kind of shows that... If you, like, show someone a little bit of kindness and just, like, listen to them, like, it's so meaningful.
Like, we're all dealing with shit. Every one of us.
It's true.
Every person you meet, even a person, like, that you think is acting, like, really crazy, could be going through some serious shit.
It's
true. And it's, you know, everything is humanizing when you talk to them and figure out what they're going through, why
it's
that
true.
Day is so hard.
I've heard people ask Phoebe Waller-Bridge in, interviews what is the show ultimately about, and she, in her own words, says it's a show about broken people.
Yeah,
and I think
that.
Yeah, every character that shows up in her life is broken in some way and is either on the way to mend or, like, maybe will never mend. It's really interesting.
I think we all are, kind of. I mean, most of us are. And then now, can we talk about your favorite character, since you skirted it earlier?
The priest.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? Andrew Scott?
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought he was really cute.
Yeah.
But when I first saw him, it was in BBC's Sherlock.
Yeah.
And he was the bad guy, and he was Moriarty, and he was weird, and so I was like, oh, am I not supposed to think he's cute? So I just didn't know that I could think he was attractive. I was like, oh, he's the bad guy. But seeing him in this, like, he is such an adorable man.
Yeah.
And also, when he needs to be, a very handsome and very suave man. So this was such an amazing role for him, I think.
Yeah.
Then again, like, I'm an American. I'm sure he's been in a million things in England that are...
I'm sure he's been in a lot, yeah.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of things. But it was really cool to see him as, like, a romantic lead.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, yeah, it is a romantic lead. But it's a very unconventional romantic lead.
Why?
I mean, he's a priest. Priests are not allowed to fall in love. Like,
it's true.
I mean, I guess they're allowed to fall in love, but...
Yeah, it's true. It's very... It's really well done, I think, the second season.
Yeah.
I love how it starts out with her... Her nose is bleeding. She's, like, looking in the mirror at the restaurant.
Yeah.
And she's just wiping the blood off of her face. And then she just looks at the camera and says, this is a love story. And you're like, what is going to happen?
That's also something we haven't talked about yet.
What?
Is, like, we are a character in this show.
Yeah.
Like, she's telling this story to us and us alone.
Yeah.
And she breaks the fourth wall. Not in a way to monologue, or not in a way, like, a Saved by the Bell, stop, pause, here's what's gonna happen, here's the plot of this episode.
Yeah.
She will, like, predict what's about to happen, but then a lot of times our expectations are subverted and we get something different.
Yeah.
But it's a very interesting mechanic, interesting storytelling mechanic.
It is interesting, because, yeah, usually when people break the fourth wall, it's very brief, and... A lot of times there is, like, a freeze frame. The people in the scene with them freeze. It is really interesting how she just goes in and out between, like, talking to the people in the scene to talking to camera.
And sometimes it's very fast, back and forth, back and forth.
It's true.
But then...
Once I found out that this used to be a play, and that she would talk directly to the audience and, like, make eye contact with them and connect with, you know, people in the audience, I was like, oh, this whole thing makes so much more sense.
It all makes sense, yeah.
Now, you understand that it's not just about, like, seeing her living her life. It's about seeing her living her life and sharing what she chooses to share with people.
Right.
But along the way, you also have to see the things that she maybe doesn't want you to see.
Yeah.
But you see it anyway. It's really, really fascinating.
But then the second season, with the introduction of the priest, he can see what she's doing.
Oh my gosh, that blew my mind.
So what do you think that means?
To me, that means And it's really sad, but it means she's actually met someone that, like, really sees her for who she is.
Okay.
And the fact that he sees when she looks away and, like, looks to the audience, when she talks to the audience, or, like, you know, looks at camera, like, the fact that he's like, what just happened? Like, where did you just go just then? Yeah. And there are a couple times that he looks at the camera.
I did like where he just turned and screams directly at the camera. That was probably my favorite moment in the whole show.
To me, I'm not sure how it was intended, but I interpret that as being, like, wow, this is someone that really connects with you, that notices when you're not present in the moment, and also, like, you know, if he hadn't been a priest, and if God hadn't been his higher calling, like, they could have been, you know, like, each other's, you know, like, person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of feels like that way towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very sad. But yeah, it's very beautiful. Like, I think it broke my heart, the ending, but it was beautiful. And it also felt right, though. You know?
Yeah,
like, it does. Like, it was heartbreaking for him to be like, it's God, you know? Like, but it's also kind of amazing for her character that, like, if she is going to lose out on this love, at least
she's losing to God.
Yeah, she's not leaving her for another woman. It's God.
If you have to compete, be like, so why did he dump you? Oh, he's seeing someone? Yeah, God. Well,
can we talk about the fox thing?
He's afraid of foxes.
Because I thought his character was really cool and really cute, but when he started, like, freaking out about thinking foxes were coming to get him, I was like, oh, I am in love with you. He's so cute. It actually reminded me of you a little bit.
Yeah, okay. I see it.
Not that you've ever been scared of foxes, but
I would.
You're a jumpy fella.
Okay.
What?
I feel like that's never said positively about anyone. He's a jumpy fella.
No, it's like 90% of the time you are, like, cool and collected, and then every now and then you're jumpy.
I'm just like to protect myself. Gotta stay on your toes. Never be complacent.
I like that about you.
Mad-Eye Moody taught me.
I like that about you. Yeah, is there anything else that you would like to talk about before we do a snack break?
Oh, I would. I've been staring at this snack. I want to break so hard.
Okay, let's do a snack break, and then we'll get back into the topic.
Let's go.
Here we go! Can you get the package? I think this is going well.
Yeah.
It's going really well.
Let's do it. And we're in a lovely little snack break. We are sitting here today and we've got a nice little, tea plate full of biscuits. I'm excited because we usually do candy.
Yeah, we do a lot of British candy, usually because it's the easiest thing for us to find.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Online or at stores.
I mean, it ships well.
But today, we're going to try something that I think is a little more famous.
Yeah.
At least to Americans, as far as being a British food. We're going to try Jammy Dodgers.
Jammy Dodgers.
What do they look like?
Well, it looks like, I mean, we've got some cookies like this. Basically, it's like a sandwich cookie, but the insert has been cut out. There's a little heart in the top of it, and inside you can see it's filled with jam. And this is raspberry flavor. I don't know if this is, like, the most famous flavor or if this is just a common one.
So,
but they do look great. They look very appealing.
The,
little splat.
So, I've seen pictures of, like, cookies that you would make in, like, the Victorian era. And a lot of them kind of look like this, where they're like a shortbread cookie, and then you fill it with jam, and then put another one on top that's got a cutout.
Yeah.
So
little window.
Yeah, these are a very kind of like old traditional little.
It's got just a thin layer of jam. Looking at it though, it's like two cookies smashed on top of each other. It's not like Oreo, which has a ton of filling, and then there's double stuff, which I'm sorry, Americans who really love it, like
too much.
That's too much sugar.
I'm into the Oreo for the cookie, not the cream.
Yeah.
You too.
But see, I don't know, because I super love those Oreo Thins, the real skimpy ones. Mm. Yeah, they got a good crunch to them.
So, I'm on the Wikipedia right now for Jamie Dodgers. It says, in 2009, Jamie Dodgers were the most popular children's sweet biscuit brand in the United Kingdom, with 40% of the year's sales consumed by adults.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're very popular.
Oh, there's a little JD on each cookie.
Yeah.
Stamped in.
That's Jamie Dodgers.
All right, shall we try one?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Oh, I really like this. I don't know if I've ever had these specifically, but, like, this flavor combination is so real and familiar. Like, this brings back childhood memories of, like, going over to my grandparents' house because they had cookies like this.
Hmm.
In, like, a big tin, usually.
So,
wow,
for Americans who are super interested in trying a Jamie Dodger, Pepperidge Farm does make a Linzer cookie. We had them at Christmas.
Like,
they taste very similar to this. I would say the cookie is a little bit different, and the jam is a little more tart.
This is a better cookie.
This is really good, though. I understand why this would be a very popular cookie,
especially for kids.
Biscuit,
because it's not messy. It doesn't crumble like a lot of other cookies. Like this sticks together, and like the jam isn't like soupy or like not. It's not bleeding out the outside of it. Like it's a very contained little biscuit snack. Wow, I really like this. I'm surprised. I mean, I like cookies, but...
It says here that Jamie Dodgers have been sold in other flavors, including raspberry, lemon, toffee, orange, chocolate, Vimto, and Berry Blast. Berry Blast. Vimto. Let me click on that. Vimto is a soft drink sold in the United Kingdom. It was first manufactured as a health tonic. What is Vimto? Vimto Cordial. Well, we gotta get some.
Do we?
It sounds cool.
It's scary sounding.
It's purple.
Oh, I don't trust that. I don't trust a purple drink.
Anyway, so Jamie Dodgers, I didn't know about them until that episode of Doctor Who. Hmm. Do you remember that one? I think it was Matt Smith. Matt Smith's character.
I don't remember a lot of his.
Well, some of them are really good.
And some of them are really not good.
It's true, but that's not his fault. There was an episode where Matt Smith's doctor was talking to a bunch of Daleks, and he was basically telling them, like, I have this detonator, and I can blow up your whole ship, and, like, in a second, with a press of this button. And they were like, no, and...
it's exactly like
no,
that.
Exterminate. And, yeah, and he ends up basically, he's bluffing. He doesn't have a detonator that can blow up their ship. He basically defeats them from bluffing. And then he,
he's good like that.
He basically, reveals that it's not a detonator with a button. He's basically holding a Jamie Dodger.
Oh, yeah.
And he's pretending. And I thought that was really cute to use, like, a classic British snack as kind of, like, a plot device in, in a show. But, yeah. So, yeah, you like this?
Yeah, that's really good.
I think Jamie Dodgers
are... I'm gonna eat the rest of those. You better be careful.
Very good. We could eat all of them tonight, actually, if we wanted. Because, look, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
How many are in there?
Not enough. I would definitely buy these again.
Mary Berry would like this.
In fact, during the Christmas season, I wouldn't mind keeping a little tin of Jamie Dodgers around.
We should do that. Keep it in one of our old tea tins.
Okay, for me, where does this rank, you think, in terms of British snacks that we've tried?
Man. I mean, we've tried a lot of candy.
True.
And so I think this is pretty high up for me. Mm. Because a lot of the chocolate candies have kind of bled together, some of them. Mm. Like a lot of the candy bars, the ones that aren't as... The ones that don't stand out kind of don't do much for me. But I do like this. I think it hits on every level I need. Like, it's sweet. It's got a good texture to it. It's very, like, it's big. I'm a big fan. I think in, like, top 10.
I think, for sure. As far as biscuits that we've tried.
Yeah.
As far as British biscuits I've tried ever.
Better or worse than Hobnob?
It's hard to say. Because they're really different camps. Like, Hobnob is very textured and chocolatey, especially a chocolate one. And this is, like, lighter and fruity.
I think a Hobnob, I have to be drinking tea.
I agree with that.
With this, I think I could have this anywhere. Like, I am drinking tea, also just eat this.
I really like the Jamie Dodger. This is quite good. I like this.
Good on you.
Mmm, I'm glad I got them.
Me too.
Cool! Well, are you ready to head back into our topic?
Let's go.
Whee!
Hey,
back to talking about Fleabag. Are there any lines or jokes that are, like, your favorites?
Man, I mean, we watch it all very quickly, and it's all so fast. I did super love, my favorite episode is the one with the sexhibition. And I love the wall of penises. And when she asks her to pick out, like, just kind of jokingly, but just trying to rub it into her face when she
goes,
"Have
you found your father?
Have you found your father?"
Yeah, he's over there.
No, and she's
have
on
you
the
found
wall.
Your father?
And it's just her way of being like, "Yeah, look at what I do to you. You have to think about your father in a sexual way." But then when Fleabag guesses it immediately, it's like that one. It is the weirdest way to shut somebody down because you can't tell. Like, does she know what it's like? Like, does she know, has she seen it before?
I think,
is she just that lucky?
I think the idea is that she was basically showing her godmother, like, you're not gonna phase me with this shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'll lean into it. I will, yes, and you.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
But then also, you find out later, Harry was up there too. Because he's there's a statue of him in this place, but it has no penis.
Yeah.
And she just says, Harry? And he turns around and walks up and says, I don't know where my penis is gone. And she's like, well, it's right there over on the wall, third from the left.
It's so good.
That, I think, was the funniest way to heighten the joke that was already there, was just being like, and my ex-boyfriend's penis is up there too, because of course it is.
Yep.
That's how petty this woman is.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite bit of the whole show.
That's,
I love that
really
episode.
Good joke.
I also love her, like, when she drops the wine glass or the champagne glass there, and she's holding the tray full of the rest and looks like she's going to drop the next one.
Yeah, that's such a good misdirect. You think, oh, she's about to drop the second one.
And just one by one.
She drops the whole tray and then drinks the one she was holding. It's,
yeah, boss.
And I think that moment illustrates, it's kind of like a metaphor for the whole show. This show does not get predictable. You think you call what's about to happen because it's what would happen in a normal show, and it doesn't happen. Something else happens. And I think that's why it's so good, is that it's so fresh.
Yeah.
So.
What about you? What are some of your favorite lines? Or your favorite jokes? Who can't even think about it?
When she shows up and Claire's had her terrible haircut.
Oh, yeah.
And she keeps saying, I look like a pencil. I don't understand how that haircut looks like a pencil, but... it's so funny. Yeah. It's so funny. And I love how she's like, come on, we're going. And they go to the hair salon. What's his name? Anthony?
Yeah.
She's like, Anthony, we want compensation for what you've done. And he's like, I just gave her what she wanted.
If you saw the source photo.
And they're like, pull out the reference photo.
Yeah.
And she's like, how dare you? But that whole speech.
And they pull it out and it's identical.
The whole speech that happens where he's like, hair isn't everything. And she goes, oh, yes, it is. Hair is everything. It's the difference between a good day and a bad day. Yeah. It's this. It's this. We're obsessed. We wish it wasn't, but it is. And it pays your bills. How dare you? And then he pulls out the photo of her thing. And he basically gave her the exact stupid haircut she wanted.
Yeah.
And then they just go, oh.
And then she says, sorry. See you next Tuesday.
Sorry, Anthony. And they just have to leave. It's so good.
Yeah, that was really good.
There are a couple of little, like, speeches that happen in this show that are becoming quite iconic.
Mm.
As far as, like, I've seen them get shared around online.
I like when Claire tells other Claire, which is a funny bit.
I love when she meets the guy from Finland and she's like, what's his name?
Claire.
I don't know why it's so funny that Claire would be in love with a guy named Claire. Like,
it's great.
It's just, it's so Claire.
Yeah.
That's so her.
But I love how she says something that he overhears where she basically made a very forward advance.
Mm.
Like, I forget the exact line, but something like, it's clear she wants to have sex with him that day, right now. And she says it out loud as he's walking away.
Yeah.
And he says, what was that? And turns around comes back.
She goes, let's get fucking crazy tonight.
That's it.
And he goes, what? And she goes, I said, let's go fuck like crazy tonight.
And he's like, all right.
Okay.
And he walks away.
It's so good.
Brilliant.
I love the whole, as far as jokes go, I love the whole fox boy thing.
Yeah.
It's really good. How he always was talking about everywhere he goes, foxes are always coming after him and trying to get to him.
And then she sees a fox at the end and is like, he went that way.
Yeah. There's a lot of really good jokes.
That's good.
Let's talk about some of the best serious moments.
Yeah, because it's a comedy, but I think the best comedies have really heartbreaking moments.
There are a lot of very good ones. One thing that I love that is running through both of the seasons or series is the sculpture that the godmother has.
Yeah.
Like, in the first episode, she comes and sees the godmother, and she's painting a painting, and...
It's a self-portrait, and it's just gray.
It's a self-portrait. And then...
Okay, that's one of my favorite jokes.
It's really good.
She's my favorite character by far. She's so
Olivia
funny.
Coleman is perfect.
And so straight-faced, everything she says.
She kind of, like, looks over at the shelf, and there's this little bronze sculpture that the godmother has done, and it's of a woman's body,
but it's just, like, torso.
No arms, yeah. Like, thigh up, and then
no
neck
head.
Down.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, like, the quintessential, like, objectification of the female body.
Yeah.
And so she kind of comments on it, and then the godmother says, well, to me, I created it with in mind that, like, women have to use their, you know, female power to get what they want and to do what they need to do. And the first time I watched that, I was like, well, okay, interesting. That's your interpretation of your piece of art. But the more I watch the show, the more you see that, like, the godmother utilizes, like, she fights in a way that men don't. She's not physical. She's so subtle and catty.
She's so manipulative.
And there's that moment in the house where I don't know what she says, but she says something about Fleabag's mother that is just terrible. And she, like, pushes her. And so the godmother slaps her across the face.
Yeah.
And then the dad kind of, like, walks up, like, what's going on? And it's like, so she can fight. She can get physical. But then when Fleabag drops all the champagne on the floor and the godmother comes over and she's surrounded by people there to see her art. She's the celebrated artist. She can't slap her. So yeah. What does she do? She looks over at the father and just kind of does this, like, little puppy dog. Like,
cry.
I'm about to cry.
Yeah.
And it just is so conniving, and it's like, wow, you are really, really using your wiles.
Yeah.
But
then it gets even worse. I mean, speaking of the statue, the very last thing you find out about it.
After she gives it to her.
After she gives it back, even
gives
though
it
everyone.
Back to the godmother at the wedding.
Everyone knows she took it. Everyone knows she took it.
Yeah.
She gives it back to her, and then the godmother tells her,
it was based on your mom.
And then I think that underlines even more what you were saying, why she created it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's Mike. Dark.
Show's dark.
There's also a really good moment where Kristen Scott Thomas shows up. Great actress. She shows up and is playing this woman who wins an award for being, like, the best woman in business. That episode is really good. I also love just the irony in that she's getting this best woman in business award, and Claire's like, just look at it, just make sure it's not something pink or something. She would hate that, you know, something ultra feminine. And when she drops the trophy,
I knew it the second the box opened. I said, well, she's
dropping gonna break that.
And seconds
she
later,
lifts it up and just completely drops it in.
That was one of the few times where they're like, we're not even gonna play around, we know you're guessing this,
you know,
so we're just getting
gonna
there.
Happen. Yeah. Yeah, and that's smart writing, is knowing what the audience think can happen and just, you know, avoiding.
I thought it was gonna be the vibrator, though.
Oh, that
I was
been,
convinced that's
that would have been funny.
Be.
At least the statue. I mean, like, the little bronze statue looks like something that could be an award, although
yeah.
It is the most inappropriate statue to give somebody.
For a woman in business.
For a woman, just a woman's naked body. It's so, like, objectifying and patronizing. But it's really good. And so she has to, like, go and get it back from Kristen Scott Thomas. And so
she falls in love with her a little bit.
There's a really, really good talk they have in the bar where Kristen Scott Thomas basically talks about, like, this is what it's like to be young as a woman. And then you get older and you go through menopause. And then she's like, I won't lie, it's terrible. But then it's awesome. And then she kind of gives her this little, like monologue about, like, once people don't sexualize you as a woman, once you're past that prime and people no longer see you as a sexual object, then they just see you as a person and you can start to operate in spaces that you couldn't when you were younger.
Yeah.
And I think that is really interesting, and I think that's a really good thing to tell to women. Because all women fear aging. I mean, everyone fears aging, men and women. But women especially, I think, because of, like, the pressures of society. Everyone wants to look young, everyone wants to look good.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really, really cool thing to kind of put out there for women to kind of, that's something to look forward to with age. You know, it doesn't have to just be like, you're past your prime, you're washed up. You know, there are perks to losing your sexual appeal in some way. So I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It was very, very meaningful for me.
And yeah, I can tell. And I mean, I think it's like the opposite for men. I think for a long, long time, like, young men, as they're growing up, are often told, like, oh, you're not a man yet. You'll know when you're older. Like, you'll find out when you're a man. And it is a thing, like, even once you get past, like, 18, past 21, legally an adult, people will still see you, like, as a boy. Like, it is a weird, like, proving ground to be a man. So you do look forward to age becoming that, where you're like, they'll see me at that some point. Like, by the time I get older, they can't see me as this anymore.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, so it is kind of interesting. It's kind of the opposite in a way.
There's also the speech the priest gives at the wedding about love. It's beautiful, and it's pretty simple, too. It's not too long-winded, but he's basically saying, like, love is terrible, it's awful, it's scary, it makes you obsess over your hair, it makes you feel, like, inadequate, like, there's all these terrible things, and he basically outlines all the worst things that love makes you do. Like, it makes you crazy, it makes you creepy, it makes you do things you never thought you'd do, so it makes sense that we would never want to do it alone.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know.
I thought it was a very good line. I would hate if somebody said that at my wedding.
Yeah, but it was the godmother's wedding, and she's crazy.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, I feel like somebody like her, I'm surprised she didn't go off or like, flip.
Yeah.
Because it felt very anti what she was for.
It's a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, but I think, yeah.
Just that, like love...
But I think on a day of love where you're celebrating love, it is not as much celebrating as much as being like, hey, yo, this is messed up what we're doing together. What we've all decided, this is awful. This is the worst thing you'll endure. So we endure it together. Rather than like, this is the best thing about life.
Interesting.
Like that,
it's interesting, because I think it's really
You would have
nice.
Rather had our priest at our wedding talk about all the shitty parts of...
No.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's a beautiful speech about love. It's a beautiful sentiment about love.
Right. In, I guess. I mean, I think it's a depressing look at love. Because I don't think I agree with that. I mean, I think it's terrible, but I also think it's the best part of life.
It's both.
Right. And I'm saying him only focusing on the negative isn't as beautiful to me as it is to you.
Interesting.
I get why it's good. But I didn't feel that had a place at a wedding, but it was a very unconventional wedding, so.
For sure.
Where there was almost a runaway groom.
Yeah, I got stuck in a hole.
Stuck? How? That was the only thing where I was like, once he pulled it out, I thought it was in a trap, because he said he got trapped. And in America, and in a place where, like, we have the woods where people put out animal traps, I was certain he stepped
in.
Oh,
like a bear trap?
Well, I was thinking that it was going to come full circle and be a fox trap. And, like, that's why there are foxes around.
Gotcha. Interesting.
But no, it was just a hole that he, like, stuck the toe of his foot in.
I don't know.
Well, I guess he is a boy. He just was like, I wonder what'll happen. Nope, I'm stuck. That's what.
I don't know. I do love the conversation that she has with the priest when they're both drinking whiskey, and then they go into the confession booth, and he's just like, no, tell me, I won't judge you, like, you know, talk to me about everything. And she kind of like says some funny things, but then it, like, she starts to really, really open up about, like, everything and how she's feeling and why she does the things that she does, you know? She's like, I'm scared. And I do this. And I use sex to, like, fill my inadequacies. And it's...
And that turns him on.
Well, I think that he really cared about her. And I think her opening up about who she is and why she does the things she does and what she's missing... Kind of, I think he thought he could help her.
By having sex with
her? If he was with her.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. It's very interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, we should watch it.
I mean, I always saw, or I guess I saw him the whole time as somebody who is a little trapped by the church and trapped by love, that, like, it's an unfair deal he's made, that he knows the choice that he did, and same with her, like...
Interesting. I think he loves it. It seems like he loves it. He's passionate about it.
Okay.
I think that he just met someone that he connected with extremely well who was hurting, and he kind of thought, you know, what if we could be together, and what if I could help her? And I think he almost, like, made that decision.
Hmm. I guess I never saw it as him, like, wanting to help her. I saw it as, like, he is a flawed person just like her, just like all of us. We all give in to things we shouldn't. I thought it was just kind of showing that, like, it's a moment of weakness for somebody who later regrets it and snaps back to what it was.
Mm.
I didn't see it as him trying to help her, because then I feel like he would have gone off with her at the end, if that's what it was about.
Mm.
I don't know, though. It's interesting.
I don't know.
Interesting how we see it very differently.
I do have to say, the scene in the first episode of season 2 with all of them at the table in the restaurant.
So good.
How they're building up how needy the waitress is, and they're building up how much of a dick Martin is, and they're building up all these different things. And, like, if you notice, the scene starts off slowly. They're kind of getting into it, catching you up.
Yeah.
And then, like, the scene gets faster and faster and faster, and the comedy gets more erratic and bigger. And it just, when it ends with, like, her punching Martin, and then Martin accidentally hitting the waitress, and then... It's just
a big mess.
I think that scene is an incredible piece of television.
Yeah, that one's very good.
It's so good. And then Martin's whole speech, like, when Fleabag comes out and says, like, I had a miscarriage. Like, it was Claire that had the miscarriage, but Claire won't go to the hospital because she thinks she doesn't need to. So the only way she can think of to get both of them to the hospital is by lying and saying, I just had a miscarriage. I need to go. Claire, you need to take me. And the way that Martin really lays into her and is like, well, sounded like it didn't want you to be its mother.
Yeah.
The goldfish jumped out of the bowl. It jumped ship. Like, the insensitive things that he is saying.
Yeah, they're terrible.
And just knowing that he's saying them to her, but he's basically saying them and his wife is right there.
Yeah,
and
it was her.
It's just amazing.
See, it's another, I didn't get her thinking of that is the way to get her sister out of there. It just felt like to me, like, that moment of panic where you can't think of anything, and you think of the first thing that just happened to you, and it just so happened to be a very personal thing she shouldn't have done, which just kind of fit her nature as, like, this person who makes those rash judgments.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like somebody who was like, ah, this is my calculated plan to get my sister to a hospital.
But she kind of uses it as a way to call out Claire in front of everyone. She says, yeah, it just happened to me, but I'm not going to the hospital because I'm dealing with it in my own insane way. Like, she's basically telling Claire so that everyone at the table can be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. You have to go. She's trying to get everyone to back her up on it.
In front of Claire.
But, anyway, that first episode's very good. But then again, the second season is very, very,
it's very good.
Good.
Yeah, I really like the first season, though.
Really? I think I prefer the second.
I mean, it's very good.
They're both really good, though. I love the guinea pigs.
Oh, so weird.
I love when Andrew Scott is holding the guinea pig. It's so cute. Do you want to hear a little bit of trivia?
Sure.
Before we start to wrap up. So, Fleabag is the nickname of the central character. It is also actually a nickname given to Phoebe Waller-Bridge by her family.
Wow.
That's what they call her. And this show isn't biographical. It's not based on her experiences or her personal history. But I think that's really interesting that that's what her family nicknamed her. So, also, I don't know if this is something you know, but the initial idea of the character came from a challenge by a friend who basically dared Phoebe Waller-Bridge to, like, create a sketch for, like, a 10-minute section of a stand-up storytelling night.
That's kind of a terrible person.
I don't know if that was part of it. But it was, like, basically, like, I dare you to do this. And she was like, okay. And then she, like, had a whole play.
So what was the dare? To just have a character?
create a sketch for a 10-minute section in a stand-up storytelling night.
Okay. Interesting.
I'll cut that one out.
I'm sorry. You can just cut my question out and leave the rest. What's something else? What other bits of trivia?
So this is pulled from IMDb trivia, which is usually correct,
pretty reliable.
But it says this is one of the many collaborations between Olivia Colman and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. They met on set of The Iron Lady in 2011.
Oh, wow.
And performed together in Noel Coward's stage play Hay Fever and in the second series of Broadchurch. After this, Waller-Bridge wrote the part of the godmother with Colman in mind.
Wow.
I saw an interview where Phoebe Waller-Bridge basically said when she was performing the play, Fleabag, Olivia Colman came to see it, and she was like, that was great! And she was like, if you ever need a character, think of me! And she was like,
Done.
I will.
I have. That's great.
And then the other piece of trivia was something we've already touched on, which is that Claire and Martin are the only members of her family whose names are spoken.
That's interesting.
Also, and this isn't really trivia, but the second season received 11 Primetime Emmy nominations.
Yeah, which is an insane amount.
And it won 6, which is insane.
Yeah.
But it's amazing.
Way better than Marvelous Miss Maisel. Hot take, I don't love that show.
It's good.
It's okay.
It's very good. It's just, I think there are people that want to see this kind of show, and there are people that want to see that kind of show.
Definitely. But, and that is not my kind of show.
But, also, Fleabag has already been remade as a show in France. I hear that it's a shot-for-shot remake. It is titled Mouche, which means fly in French.
Interesting. So.
Interesting.
She's a little fly.
So that is all
That's
the
Fleabag.
Trivia. How British do you think Fleabag is? Is Fleabag?
I suppose there are parts of it that feel very British, especially the idea that, you know, like, I think not a lot of places around the world have, like, bike lanes. I think it's becoming more commonplace, but I think in a big city environment like that, it feels very London. But I don't know. I think it's very human. It could take place in any city in the world.
I was going to say, I think out of pretty much everything British that we've covered on this podcast, this is maybe the thing that is the most universal.
At least the concept. I think the content wouldn't be shown in some countries.
Absolutely.
I don't think America would remake this.
I think if you did, the character... I don't know that Americans could deal with an American female character like this.
I don't... If it existed, I think it would end up being on, like, an HBO or an AMC.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it would be on a Big Four. Like, it wouldn't be prime time.
The Brits are more open about sex than Americans are.
Americans
they
are
also...
more open about violence.
It's true. And they also like curse words more than we do in America.
Well, yeah, because
they
kind of got rid of religion, so they're like, oh yeah, curse words don't send us to hell. Let's just say them. These words are great.
Why should somebody watch Fleabag, do you think?
If you want to connect with other fuck-ups, like, if you've ever thought, like, are other people thinking these terrible thoughts? Am I, like, the only awful person in this world? No, you're not. Everyone's thinking that. Watch this show. Like... It's very funny, it's very surprising,
yeah.
It's very sad,
yeah.
It's poignant and touching. Like, I think it's extremely well-written, well-acted. Every single person who's in this is giving a great performance from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's short. There are, like, 25-minute episodes.
True.
There's only 12 of them overall.
Yeah, we binged both seasons in, like, 2 days.
3 days, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think anyone could watch this. I think as long as, like, if you're my mom, as long as you can get past the cursing and some of the sex jokes.
I don't think my mom would ever watch it.
I think she might like it.
I don't think she would.
Ooh, Sandy.
I think people who are extremely conservative and or religious.
You're right.
Would especially find the second season upsetting.
You're right.
My mom would
not like that. Because it is very irreverent.
Yeah, very sacrilegious.
But, Yeah, I think almost anyone could watch it because I think it is so human. That's kind of something that you said earlier. It is so human that, like, it's hard not to connect with her. Anyway, are you ready to guess your word?
I am so ready.
So the word this week was actually submitted by one of our listeners.
I like it.
Catherine Ashworth. And the word, well, it's a phrase, actually. It's duck egg. So,
okay. Is it Cockney rhyming slang?
No.
Okay.
If you were to call someone a duck egg, what are they doing?
I think, well, I know in sports terminology, a goose egg means zero. So if somebody's got a goose egg, they've got nothing.
Ooh.
So I think a duck egg is smaller than a
Canadian?
Goose egg. Is that Canadian? I don't think so. I mean, it might be.
Geese? But hockey? Usually,
but I've always heard it, especially in baseball. Like, somebody won, like, 5-0. Like, oh, we put up a goose egg.
Oh, like, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. And so I think a duck egg is smaller than a goose egg. So a duck egg is less than nothing. Like, so if somebody is being a duck egg, it's like, you're not nothing. You're less than nothing.
You're a duck egg.
You're a duck egg. Yeah.
Well, that is not the...
It's not what Catherine submitted.
I'll actually read you the email that Catherine sent about it.
Okay.
Very quick, very quick. She says, "Hi, Danny. Just thought of a great term to try Sheldon on. It was something my grandma used all the time when I was a kid. Duck egg. It's an insult meaning you're an idiot." I'm not sure if it's just a Lancashire phrase or common of the North in general. Hope you're both well, Catherine.
I think I'm right.
Duck egg? I mean...
You're less than nothing.
You're calling someone nothing is different than calling someone an idiot.
Maybe they have less than nothing for brains. You got a duck egg for brains.
You're right.
Duck egg.
Did you hear that, Catherine? Sheldon got it right.
Did you hear that, Catherine's gran? Sheldon got it right.
Oh my gosh, don't talk about her gran.
Her gran's lovely.
So that was Fleabag. Is there anything else that you want to hit on before we close out?
No, I think that pretty much does it.
I really love at the very end of the second season how she kind of looks at the camera and the camera starts to follow her down the street, but she just kind of looks back and sweetly, like, crying, but kind of smiles and just shakes her head no, like, don't
follow
me. We're
done here. Yeah.
And she walks away from the camera and it's like the first time that you're like, whoa, I think we're saying goodbye. And then she goes down the sidewalk a little bit and kind of waves goodbye. And I agree. I think people keep saying, like, there needs to be another season, but I think she really ended it.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with it.
If like, the James Bond franchise comes up to you and says, we need you to punch up our movie, I think you have a huge career ahead of you.
True.
Like,
oh, yeah.
While this show is great, she's going to create some even better things in this show.
It's true.
Like, she's got a huge future.
Have you seen Crashing?
I haven't yet.
That is a show that's another show she wrote.
Wait, that's with another American, right? Rob,
I don't know.
The guy from Twitter.
No,
that's Catastrophe.
That's Catastrophe.
Who's in Crash?
But we should, I don't know, but we should watch it.
Yeah, let's do
anyway,
it.
Anyway, okay, well, thank you everyone for joining us. We're going to post a picture of our Jammy Dodgers on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
And a picture, or of that gif of the queen seeing cows.
Of the queen seeing cows. And if you want to send us an email, we're anglefilespodcast@gmail.com.
Files with an F.
All right, everyone, keep calm and remember, putting pine nuts on your salad doesn't make you an adult.
It fucking does. Please,